Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about our work in Africa and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited because we have a special show today. We have with us today Jen Colmore, who's a senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, and Jen is actively involved in Living Compassion's service projects in Africa. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on the air with us. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I thought we could start with just looking at kind of the newest news in the projects in Africa. Does that seem like a good place to start?
That sounds great. And if you even want to start a step back with just a bigger picture of what we're doing, I think that would also be helpful for people who may not be familiar or up to date with what we're doing.
Yeah, what our projects are in Africa anyway.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly.
So actually, I was just thinking about it today because our project in Zambia started when Sherry met Brother John in Assisi, where she happens to be right now on retreat, too. So when she was in Assisi, I guess it's 3 years ago now, she was in Assisi, and she met Brother John Kapenda, a Franciscan friar from Zambia, and they hit it off immediately and realized that they had a common vision, which was helping vulnerable children in Africa. And John and his siblings grew up in just incredibly dire poverty in the city of Ndola in Zambia,
yeah,
and had a vision of helping children who had grown up the way they had in dire poverty. And so he and Sherry got together, and the first step they decided to take was to buy a house that Ignatius, John's brother, would live in with his new wife. And we bought them a house in Ndola, and they took in 9 children who had been orphaned by AIDS.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So that's how the whole thing got started, and every project has kind of naturally blossomed from there. So the next project was to adopt Masala Primary School, where most of the children in the house attend.
Yes.
It's a school that's typical in at least southern African countries in that it serves 2,500 students with very few resources.
Wow.
And so they could really use a partner to help get things up and running there. So we started that project. We also started a food program in the area where John and Ignatius grew up, in the very poor area. It's an outskirt of Ndola outside the city. And that's the kind of area where, you know, folks are living in houses made with mud and cardboard and just, you know, found scrap kind of material.
Yeah.
And the children are anywhere from hungry to very malnourished, on the brink of starvation.
Yeah.
So we started a food program there that's now up and running.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And there's also the sewing cooperative.
And the sewing cooperative, yep. I had a great conversation with someone in another organization in the Bay Area who happens to be just starting up a sewing cooperative in Zambia also.
Wow.
That was really fun.
That's exciting.
Yep. And we were talking about, they started a sewing cooperative in a little town called Kapiri, which is between Lusaka and Ndola. It's actually a town that we drive through frequently because we fly into Lusaka when we go, and then we have to make that drive up to Ndola.
Yes.
And Kapiri is it's on the main trucking route between, like, South Africa and all the way up to Tanzania and countries like that. And so there's a really high level of HIV/AIDS in that one particular town because of prostitution and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is an issue, of course, in southern Africa in general. And this woman that I was talking with was saying how this sewing cooperative is such an amazing project because it's hope for these women who are joining. She said just this week they started training 10 women who are all sex workers.
Wow.
Prior to being trained.
Yes.
In the sewing cooperative.
Wow.
Yeah.
So providing some alternative opportunities.
Exactly, exactly. Zambia is a country of over 80% unemployment.
Wow.
There really aren't jobs, even for folks who are trained in a trade. There really aren't jobs for them. And so usually when an organization goes in to do any kind of service work in Africa, jobs, you know, sustainability, giving folks a way to support themselves has to be a huge piece of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And as I've heard you talk about before, there are people being trained to sew in Zambia, and after they're trained, there's no employment to go to.
Exactly. Exactly. And actually, that's where the idea for the sewing cooperative came from for us. We have stayed in years past at the Franciscan Friary where John was trained, and there's a tailor school there, which is great. It's great that there's a vocational school there, and it's frustrating for many of the folks who go through that vocational training because, as you say, they graduate and they now have a skill, but
yes.
they have no means. There still are no jobs, and
yes.
they don't have the money to, say, buy their own machine and begin their own small business.
Yes. Yeah, that has to be frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So actually, that's one of the other things this woman was saying that I spoke with today, is how incredibly receptive and cooperative this group of women have been that she was working with. She said it's not always that way when they begin a new project, but that this group of women had been particularly grateful and cooperative in beginning the project.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting. Yeah. Yep.
And you have some current updates as well on some of these different.
Yep. So one of the things that I mentioned, Masala Primary School, and recently it was very sad. We got an email from Ignatius. You know, with email and internet, it really makes projects like this very easy to do, in that we can be in close contact, you know, halfway across the world.
Yes.
So I'm in regular contact with Ignatius, who is not only the father at the house of Living Compassion, but he's the director of Living Compassion in Zambia. So he's the one coordinating all of the projects.
Wow.
And so I was in recent communication with him, and he said there's been a cholera outbreak in the Ndola area.
Oh.
And that the school has some sewage issues. They're right at the end of the city sewer lines, and the toilet houses, they call them ablution blocks, but they're these long sort of structures with several lots of toilets in them, and they're old, just ancient, and the pipes are broken, and the sewage backs up into the play yard, and, you know,
yes.
the whole deal. And so because of the cholera outbreak and the sewage backing up, they had to close the school.
Close the whole school?
Close the whole school, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So so that's one of the things we've been working closely with Ignatius on, is, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step? So I just sent off a money wire the other day, which included money to get disinfectants in there and to unblock the pipes and things like that, so to get things moving. And they are able to. They've done a stopgap measure so that they can at least reopen the school, but there's a lot that needs to happen in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
One of the other things that the school really needs is a lunch program, because, again, as with the slum area where we have the food program, many of the children who come to the school are hungry. You know, if they eat, they're not eating three regular meals, anything like we're used to here in this country.
Yes.
And so putting in a lunch program would be a really big deal. It would just go a long way to getting some nutrition in these little bodies and giving them a chance to really be able to focus and concentrate in the classroom.
Yes.
And so we've begun a quilt project to raise money to renovate a home economics room to turn it into a kitchen. And
yes.
We have a local woman here who participates in the Bay Area Zen Center, who is a fabulously talented quilter.
Yes.
And she came on the trip to Africa last year, and she has volunteered to coordinate this effort, which is that people are going to buy quilt squares, and then they can either create the quilt square themselves or they can commission us to do it for them. And then when we get all the quilt squares together, we're going to make a gigantic quilt, which we'll take over with us to present to Masala School at the groundbreaking of the new kitchen.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's fun. And I plan to be one of those people purchasing a quilt square.
Very good. And we've heard so many fun stories of people. You know, there's one woman who's purchasing a square with her grandchildren, and they're going to make it. And there's a classroom that's going to buy a square, and they're going to all participate in making it. So it doesn't just have to be an individual thing, but it could be groups of folks who want to join together and buy one together and have them, you know, themselves represented in some way in this quilt.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And as you're talking, I'm realizing that a lot of this information is on our website, which is really beautiful, in my opinion.
Yep.
And you can go straight to the Africa work by typing in africa.livingcompassion.org.
Yep.
Take straight to the Africa homepage, and if you want to read about the other projects as well, you can go to livingcompassion.org.
Exactly. Yep.
Great.
Yeah.
Jen, any other specific updates? And I want to let you know we also have a caller on the line.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll tell you, I could go on and on for hours, so why don't we just jump in and I can, as things come up, I'll throw them in.
Yes, and as we talked about a little bit earlier, the concept of service and how it fits in with the spiritual practice and the work in Africa.
Yes, yeah, I'd love to touch on that.
Great. Yeah. I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, this is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
So, I have a question for you.
Great.
Something I'm looking at these days has to do with time.
Mm.
Basically, like, it seems like however hard I work, there just never seems to be enough hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, working harder probably isn't going to solve that.
Right.
And this is something I've looked at before, and so I guess I'm wanted to talk to somebody about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when you were saying that, this book title popped up for me, Working Smarter, Not Harder, which is actually, I to tell you the truth, I have no idea what the book is about. I never read it. I came across it when I, in my former life, before I was a monk at the monastery, I was a teacher. I taught fourth grade. And talk about work. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I spent years kind of in the what I project you're talking about, that process of I know I can get on top of it. If I can just work harder, I know I can get on top of it. Is that kind of the sense that there's not enough time to do everything you want to do, but somehow the sense that the belief that if you just keep working harder, you'll be able to do it?
So I'm kind of giving that up.
Right, right.
And saying
that doesn't work.
There's a different process going on.
Uh-huh.
So that I could get, you know, 10 times more efficient, and I think I'd be about where I am.
Yes, yeah. And so I'm guessing that given that's where you are, that you've kind of worn out the try harder. It's not going to work. Even no matter how efficient you get, you'll still be in this place where there's not enough time.
Yeah, and where I just don't know how to allocate my time, I guess, so that I can live happily.
Ah.
What it comes down to.
So the bottom line is wanting to live happily.
Yeah.
And so is there a sense that things need to be slower for you to be happier, or how would you frame that?
What I'm looking at is that I have certain needs. There's just certain things that I really, I don't know, that various parts of me need.
Uh-huh.
Like I need social connection.
Right.
So it's important for me to go out and be with friends and stuff like that.
Right.
And I don't think that's something that I could just say, you know what, I'm just not going to do that.
Right.
So there's certain things, or I need to eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I need to meditate. That's something that I won't compromise on.
Right.
But then everything else, it gets really confusing.
Everything else gets really...
Confusing.
Confusing, uh-huh.
Like, you know, how much time do I put to this or to that?
Right. So am I hearing that it feels like there's this set of needs and there isn't enough time to meet all of them?
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because when you said that you wanted to live happily, essentially, it's, you know, sometimes in practice we talk about, well, what is it that I want? You know, so So in your case, Paul, if you were to say, if you had enough time, if there were enough time to meet all those needs, how would you feel? What experience would you have?
I think I'd feel pretty relaxed and pretty good.
Uh-huh. Pretty relaxed.
Huh.
Right. So would you say maybe the underlying need of all of those various needs, so you need to meditate and you need to have some time with friends and you need to eat and all of those things, that underneath that there's just a desire to kind of go through life relaxed?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it would be interesting, wouldn't it, to experiment with just going through life relaxed.
Uh-huh. So that would be a nice end.
Right.
That would be a nice kind of thing to experience. So, yeah, so I'm faced with this task of watching what I think is, I don't know, what seems like a pretty complex process.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I see little things here and there, but I'm, you know, very much in the thick of it.
Right, right. You see, in other words, you here and there you have little awarenesses about it, but it feels like mostly you're really in the thick of it.
Uh-huh, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So again, so there you are in the thick of it. So remembering that, oh, yeah, what I want is to be relaxed.
Hmm.
And so there I am in the, gosh, I don't have enough time. I really want to meditate, but I also really want to see friends, and I also really want to do a good job at, and I want to do this, and I want to... So in that, my focus of attention is on not enough time, basically, right? And so I wonder what it would be like to practice with, when I'm in that, as you say, in the thick of it, turning my attention to relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess I could look at certain decision points and kind of think, like, how does this either sort of contribute to the feeling of relaxed or take away from it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost like that place that we talk about of looking at, does this lead towards suffering or away from it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can do that with external decisions, and we can also do that with internal processes. So is what I'm doing right now leading towards relaxation or away from it? Does that make sense?
I'm doing leading... Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. You know, I've experienced when I go to the monastery that for me somehow the rules change.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's because I haven't been there long enough at a stretch.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, there's no email and there's really nothing to do besides working meditation.
Right.
And the working meditation is just, like, time-based. At least the ones I've done so far, it hasn't been like you have to have X done by this time.
Right.
I just go and do it. But
right.
I kind of get suspicious, though, and I wonder if I was at the monastery for long enough, if if I'd find something to suffer over, you know.
I suspect, I can speak from experience.
Huh?
It's very likely that you would do that. And, you know, it set up that reason, Paul, on purpose, so that, because, you know, if we're practicing something, then we want to put ourselves in, to begin with, in a situation where it's easy to practice that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, we always use sports analogies. So if I'm going to start to train for a marathon, well, I'm not going to run the 26 miles the first day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might not even start running the first day. I might start walking. And so that's why when folks come to the monastery and we're practicing awareness, it's, you know, it's a skill to turn that attention inward and to say, in the context of what we're talking about today, to be able to relax under any circumstances. And so we begin with less challenging, where there's not a lot going on, you're not in your usual life, there isn't email, you know, you're not under a time constraint. You know, we begin there.
Mm. Yeah, you know, the more I think of this practice as gaining skills,
mm-hmm.
sort of the easier it is for me, because it's not like I'm, how to put it, like not good enough or I have bad intent or whatever, but I'm just sort of lacking certain skills.
Exactly.
That are learnable.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just learning this. It's, you know, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with me that I can't run 26 miles. You know, no one can when they first go out there.
Right, yeah.
We just begin. If this is what I want to do, okay, then I'll just begin practicing. And as you say, it's learnable.
I think it is. That's what keeps me going.
Yeah, great. Great, perfect.
Good, thanks very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry on World Talk Radio. I'm excited today. We have a special guest, Jen Colmore, who's a monk, senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. And Jen is very active with the service work in Africa. And Jen, I was thinking, as Paul was talking, the practice, the spiritual practice that we do often seems to be focused on service toward ourselves.
Yes.
Looking inward.
Yep.
And now there's this work in Africa,
yep,
which seems to some part of me like it's serving, quote, others.
Right.
Unquote.
Yeah, I was thinking the very same thing. And how, you know, what Paul was talking about is such a perfect example. You know, each of us could plug in whatever word we plug in. What I really want is relaxation or happiness or equanimity or, you know, well-being or whatever it may be.
Yes.
And that, in my experience, as we begin to practice, we experience that more and more and more of the time in our lives. And
yeah,
we actually have the, as we were talking about with Paul, we grow the ability to carry that with us through all situations. And it, and to me, the natural outgrowth of that is a gratitude.
Yes.
It's just a gratitude for living life in that way.
Yes.
And there's a desire to participate, you know, to give back. To, in addition, there's also a space that's created. So all that time that used to be used up in, you know, trying to make the right decision and, you know, trying to get everything done and be the perfect person or whatever the condition standard would have me do, as I practice, all of that energy, that focus, even literally the time, is freed up. And
yes,
and we start to turn and look, well, what else is there? You know, what else,
yes,
is there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I remember looking at this, the concept of time, as Paul was talking about a couple of years ago, you know, and as long as my energy is focused on that conversation about not enough time,
yeah,
you know, that conversation takes up time and energy.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's so ironic when you actually look at it.
It's so, and it's true. And it's funny because it takes a leap of faith, in a sense, for us to, because we're so conditioned to think that I've got to make plans, and I've got to try to schedule it all out, and I've got to, and as you say, that very process of ruminating over all of it actually takes time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating. And I was noticing today a similar idea, the idea of working on stuff that is important and not urgent.
Mm.
You may have heard of the gold time management idea.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it's like it's new to my system,
right,
to work in that way where there's not the urgency, the stress,
yeah,
of something wrong, of last minute, of, and it's sort of relaxing into that process.
Yes, yes, yeah. And, you know, the work in Africa is so, it's such kind of a poignant experience of that, in that, you know, you could say it's really urgent. I mean, there are, you know, there are millions of children starving.
Yes.
You know, God, we got to hurry. And,
yes,
you know, that really doesn't serve anyone, that sense of urgency, that, you know, because good decisions don't come out of that. You know, compassion,
yes,
doesn't grow out of that.
Yes.
But from that, but that doesn't exclude being very committed to and wanting to help in any way that we can and assist in any way that we can. And that from that place to me that you're describing of, you know, I'm really committed, I'm giving it everything I've got, I'm going full speed ahead, and that's not the same as being urgent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And with practice, we learn that distinction.
Yes.
Which, yes, is not apparent. At least it wasn't apparent to me early on.
Yes, yeah. That at first it can be difficult to discern between giving it my all, going full speed ahead, and getting frantic and urgent about something.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Jen, let me give out the phone number here again. If you'd like to join our conversation about the work in Africa and service generally, we'd love to hear from you today. The phone lines are open here, and the number is toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, and that is 866-613-1612. Please give us a call. And if you're further away, you can reach us from outside the U.S. at 001-858-268-3068. Yes. Jen, it occurred to me as we're talking, we talk often about projection.
Uh-huh.
And service to ourselves and service to others. Mm-hmm. In the practice, we talk about just service.
Mm.
And it seems like that could be a metaphor for the work in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not, I'm serving others.
Right.
It's not like anybody needs to be fixed.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. That there's so much on so many levels that we, being the big we, get from doing service. In fact, I was just thinking, as I was thinking about this topic today, I think it's a quote by someone named Ginny Ditzler, who wrote Best Year Yet,
yes,
the book, that she said something like, if we do not have something larger to serve, we will self-serve.
Yeah.
And how it's actually such a gift to have something outside of myself, something bigger than me, to serve.
Yes.
Because it doesn't, you know, I can think from my conditioned mind, I can think that, you know, I want what I want, and I can, you know, I want to get my stuff and make my life be what I want it to be. And, you know, we can try that, you know, we can go that route, and it doesn't tend to work. And so to have something bigger than me to throw myself into, to be a part of, is such a gift.
Yes.
There's so much in that. And so to me, that's what you're pointing at, that I serve, and yes, that has some effect on other people's lives, and I'm greatly served in the process of participating in that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There's so much in what you're sharing. All these ideas just keep popping up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's exciting. Let's take a break. I'm going to give you the phone number one more time.
Okay.
It's 866-613-1612. Phone lines are open here. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Coming up next in our second half of today's Open Air Show, we'll be continuing our conversation on Living Compassion's projects in Africa and service, and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Today's show is a special edition. We have with us Jen Colmore, senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and very active in Living Compassion's service work in Africa. Jen, I was thinking from our conversation before the break,
mm-hmm.
with conditioning, it seems that the story is that if I self-serve, I'm going to get what I want.
Yes.
And I
exactly
followed that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm paying attention, I see that it doesn't actually lead there.
Yes, exactly. That says it so perfectly, that if I self-serve, I'll get what I want. And actually, the flip is true in my experience, that when I'm part of something larger, when I get to participate in something bigger than me, that's where I get what I really want. You know?
Yes.
It's sort of back to the conversation we were having with Paul, that you know, I think I want more time, but what I really want is just to be relaxed.
Yes.
And so, you know, what I really want is actually served in service. That's
yes.
what actually results from being, I mean, I think about, you know, some of the most fun days are the days we have when the folks participating in Living Compassion come together to pull a big event together.
Yes.
And we all get in there and just make it happen, you know, late hours into the night and early in the morning. And but there we are, you know,
yes,
having
great.
Fun together, participating together, really
yes.
serving.
Yes, there's that energy, that sense of participation.
Yes, yeah.
The sense of participating in something that feels like it's a benefit to all.
Yeah, and, you know, people know that experience, I'm sure. You know, it would be interesting to hear from folks, but that, you know, whether it's be, you know, participating in someone's death is something that people will talk about a lot, or participating in someone's birth, or, you know, serving in an organization like we're talking about, or something that just calls us out of ourselves and requires us, you know, to be really present and really here and just kind of brings us to a deeper place, I guess you could say.
Yes, and it sounds like the bottom line is participation.
Yeah.
And it's almost irrelevant what it is.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Could be just about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was thinking, too, as you were talking, there's a sense for me that at some level, I have to do this work. It's just in my system.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And if anybody else is served by it, great.
That's right. Yeah.
And if not, I still want to do it.
Yeah.
I want to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's such a great gift because it's not coming from a place of, boy, that's a really good person thing to do. I should really do that. You know, that if I did that thing, that would make me good. It's not coming from that place. It's coming, as you say, more from a, I've got to do this thing. It's just in the fiber of my being.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And I've heard Sherry talk about it in terms of artists, you know, a painter or a musician. They just have to get it out of their system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which, you know, people can see as a as difficult in terms of spiritual practice. Gosh, why do I have to be one of those people? And yet it's such a huge gift because there just does seem to be that need to kind of to look deeper and to really, well, as you say, participate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And actually, we have a big participation opportunity associated with Africa coming up later this year on September 22nd.
September 22nd.
We have the Bridge Walk.
Tell me more.
Yeah. It's our fifth annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk.
Yes.
So it's the fifth time we've done it. And so we decided it's so fun every year. And at the end of last year's event, we just had this big inspiration. Gosh, you know, I mean, if we can do this much with this group of people, I think we raised $20,000 last year, why not grow it five times? So that's our goal for this year, to have 500 people in attendance and to raise $100,000.
Yes.
And we have a team of people, of volunteers who are working on making that happen. In fact, it was just... I just had a conference call with them this morning.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and it's very fun. We've come up with this idea of a team gallery.
Team gallery.
A team gallery. We're going to be inviting people all over the country to create teams.
Yeah.
And so, for example, the monks are going to be a team, and we're Team Yes.
Team Yes.
So, Team Yes. And so we'll create a fundraising, you know, goal for ourselves. And we'll probably write up a little thing about ourselves and put some kind of picture. And so our picture with our write-up and our fundraising goal will go up on the team gallery on the website.
Great.
And it'll be all of, you know, all the teams from all over the country. And so folks can see what other people are doing and even exchange fundraising ideas.
Yeah.
And people who are not either on a team or can't participate in the event can go to the team gallery and sponsor a team.
Great.
Yeah, it's very fun. And you don't have to be in attendance at the event to create a team.
Yeah.
Yep.
You could be on the East Coast.
That's right.
You could be in Italy.
That's right.
In China.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
And in that, there's that sense of we.
Exactly.
Of participation.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because that's a big goal for a small organization to raise $100,000 on that day.
Yeah.
And I just know we can do it. You know,
yes.
I know we can make it happen. And the enormous difference that $100,000 can make in the projects in Zambia.
Yes.
Yeah.
dollar goes a long way.
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's Saturday, September 23rd.
23rd, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Just, I have the web here in front of me, so
I don't have
to keep me on track. And that's the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Yep. Exactly.
And at that time of year, there's a good chance of good weather.
We tend to have good luck. Last year was the exception.
Yes. I mean, how many years can you go of 80 degrees and sunny in October?
Exactly.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But it will be again this year, and it's a fun day of lunch and T-shirt painting, and actually these our volunteer coordinators have great things in store for us this year. We're going to have all kinds of information stations where people learn about the projects and all kinds of fun stuff, games and...
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Jen, I want to follow up with a couple of events that are coming after that.
Yeah.
They're not directly Africa-related.
Yep.
They are very much Living Compassion related.
Definitely.
And that's an open house at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, mm-hmm. about 3 hours east of the Bay Area. And that'll be from the 24th to the 27th.
Right.
So the day following the bridge walk, the Sunday,
yeah.
and through the middle of the next week. And then the next weekend will be a precepts renewal retreat for people who have already done the precepts retreat.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And I think last week on the show, you had Deb and Dave.
Yes.
Talking about the sustainability efforts down at the monastery.
Yes.
And so that's what, largely what that event, the open house event, is going to be centered around, is kind of putting the whole monastery on tour for people to see the efforts we've been making in that area.
Yeah, that's great.
As
we talked about last week, there's the... quote, external sustainability of solar systems and wind power,
yep.
and the internal sustainability of the practice and
yep.
taking care of ourselves and seeing the interconnectedness of life.
Yep.
And in that, the sort of internal-external distinction, you kind of lose it.
Right, yeah.
Kind of hard to keep track after a while, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, which really, again, ties back into service, doesn't it?
Yes.
So if I'm doing service work from a place of it's, you know, the good, right person thing to do, I really don't want to do it, but I should do it, well, that's not sustainable. But if it comes from a place of, as we were talking about before, kind of an overflowing, there's a gratitude because I'm practicing and my life is working and I'm experiencing well-being, then there's just an excess of energy and a desire to give back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's exciting. Jen, I was wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about the upcoming trip this summer.
Sure.
Africa.
Love to.
You go every summer.
Yep.
And what's on tap this summer?
Yeah, a lot on tap, actually, this summer. Where to even begin? One of the big things we're going to be doing this summer is Sherry and I were recently down in Los Angeles meeting with an organization down there who works on affordable housing in L.A., and they would like to expand their work to Africa, and
they
would like to partner with us to do it.
Wow.
And they have big visions of, you know, meeting with the folks in Ndola in Zambia and looking at, okay, what kind of housing is needed here? What would best suit the culture, the land, et cetera? And then to begin on a pretty large-scale housing kind of a project, they're looking at maybe a 5,000 family situation.
And you say 5,000 families?
Mm.
Wow. Yeah.
But so they're talking, you know, gigantic acres and acres and acres and acres of land.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so what's so fabulous about their vision, and we got to visit some of their projects in Los Angeles and see this firsthand, is that it's housing, and it's also right on the site, there's childcare, and there's, you know, community services. So there's, for example, assistance with job searching, and, you know, there can be a clinic right on site, a medical clinic, that kind of thing. So it's very holistic. It's a very holistic approach to housing. And so one of the things we're going to be doing, we actually figured out a way to bring one of the women from that organization with us this summer. She's a woman who, she also happens to be a stellar photographer, so that's really a good plus for us, too. And what she's going to help us do is do a needs assessment when we're there.
Needs assessment.
So yeah. To meet with the folks in Indola and basically ask those questions. What would you like to see if we were, you know, if we were to be able to assist in this way? What kind of housing would you see? You know, what materials would you use? What would it look like? You know, would they be single-family homes? Would they be apartments? Would they be, you know, how would it look? So that will be a huge piece of the trip this summer.
Wow. Talk about being respectful of people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one incredible.
It's the main reason we went down there to meet with them in person to L.A. is that we really wanted to make sure that their vision matched ours in terms of the how that they do things.
Yes.
And it really does.
Yes. Yeah. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have to come up with different words besides wow.
I know.
I've just realized I'm kind of overusing it this show. And it's all really wonderful that living in a place of possibility.
Yeah.
And what can be done.
Yes. You know, it reminds me that who was it? I suppose it was Sherry probably found something in a magazine recently where there was a study done and asking folks from all different cultures various questions. Came away with a report saying that folks in Africa are the most optimistic of any continent.
Wow.
And they ask questions like, you know, do you expect to be more prosperous or less prosperous next year? Do you, all kinds of questions about the future. And by pretty big percentage margins, Africans answer things more optimistically than other cultures. And I just find that fascinating. When you said so much possibility there, that's one of the things that really strikes me about working there is that, you know, I mean, it's a hard situation in most cases. I mean, there's poverty everywhere. There's, you know, HIV/AIDS is touching every single family deeply, as does malaria. I mean, malaria is actually still a larger killer than HIV/AIDS. So
yes.
It's just they're up against a lot, and yet there is so much hope and so much possibility, and when we come in to talk about what's next, you know, there's tons of ideas and tons of enthusiasm and gratitude and excitement and all of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Jen, we have a caller.
Okay, great.
I'd like to welcome Karen from Chico. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
I don't know if you can hear me okay, because all of a sudden I can't hear you very well.
Oh, I can hear you fine.
Okay, all right, I could hear that. Well, I just got high-speed internet, so I'm just able now to listen to the show.
Oh, very
and,
good.
So I thought I'd call in, and I thought maybe you could talk about reflective listening in as it relates to service, because it's what's coming up a lot in my life. What I'm really feeling like I'm trying to do now, or although I'm not very well practiced at it,
uh-huh.
And what I'm finding in my life and in my work, that if I even just when I'm in the presence of someone can remember that I have that intention that I want to do it.
Yep.
That I just all it just brings me into the, it just brings me to the present with that person, just that.
Yes, that is definitely my experience too. Yeah, that just because to remember it, you know, in order to remember it, I have to be present, don't I? I have to be here, and my intention to be with that person right there is likely communicated to that person.
Well, it feels like that to me, too.
Yeah.
And today I put my watch on my other arm so that, because I have to use my watch a lot to,
mm-hmm.
in my work, and so whenever I'd go to look for it, it would be on the wrong arm, and then I'd remember to, oh, I want to do reflective listening.
Yeah.
And so I'm very much aware of wanting to do more service in my life, but I don't know really. This is the best I can do right now.
Yeah, well, you know, as you're talking, it's so funny. What's coming up for me is, in a way, that is the greatest service we can do in our life, and in, you know, therefore it touches other lives too, doesn't it? That the work of spiritual practice is probably the greatest gift we can give to the world. And that reflective listening is an expression of practice. It's an expression of the intention to take full responsibility for myself and to be fully present with the other person. So to not, you know, make them need to be a certain way or to please me or not please me, or to, but just to be present with that person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so far, all the, as far as I've gotten is I have the intention. I want to do it. I want to be present. I want to be able to reflect this person. But so far, all I've been able to do is to realize in the moment that that's my intention.
Uh-huh.
And then I just, well, I don't have very much skill at it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, were you online to hear Paul's conversation?
No, I tuned in late.
Yeah. Well, it was. We were having a conversation with a fellow who was. There's many similarities in it, and we were talking about an analogy. You know, we're saying how we always use sports analogies when we're talking about practice,
mm-hmm.
and talking about growing a muscle. How practice is practice.
Uh huh.
And that, to me, that's exactly what you're talking about. That at first I begin by just, well, at first I begin by never even remembering that I have that intention, right?
Right.
And then, surely, you know, slowly, I begin to, oh, right, my intention was to try reflective listening. And then maybe after a while I begin to actually remember it in the first minute of the conversation. In the first minute of the conversation, I'm practicing reflective listening, and then maybe I forget. And then as time goes on, maybe for a longer period of time, I remember in the conversation that my intention is to use reflective listening. And like that, that it literally is a practice. You know, I'm practicing remembering to do that, remembering to bring it in.
Well, yeah, that's really neat. There's something in just the remembering that
yeah.
just that turns me toward the person, and it's like I see them.
Yeah.
And that is so... that's such a wonderful thing for me.
Yeah.
I don't know how the other person perceives it, but it just feels yeah. so good.
Yes, exactly.
To try to really see someone.
Yeah,
and,
it does feel so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would project partly because in that, you're seen too.
Oh.
You know, there's a, in that way that Michael, I think, was talking about earlier, that... that in serving, I am served. It's for
yes.
me. I receive from it.
Yes, it definitely feels like I'm receiving.
Yeah.
If I can give that, that's exactly what it feels like. And it's tiny. I mean, I really need to cultivate this and practice it. And but I'm seeing that this is coming up more and more in my life, and that it's something that my heart really wants to do now. And,
yeah. Yeah,
and I've heard about it for years from you guys, and I've certainly experienced it from you guys, but it's never come up in me so much that this is what I want to do.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Isn't that fun?
For some reason, it just feels like you've really—it's really the next thing for you.
Yes, that's those are the words.
It's
the next thing.
Yeah, that's really neat. You know, monks do crazy things like practice on themselves. So,
yeah.
You know, you might be driving along on your way to work, you know, you're by yourself in the car, mm-hmm. and there's something going on. You know, there's just, I'm tired, or I'm stressed, or even I'm, you know, it doesn't even have to be something quote-unquote negative, but just something's going on with me, so I check in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, Karen, tell me about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hi, mama, and just, you know, let that part of you go. You know, no censoring, just let that part of you say whatever's going on, and then you get to reflect it. Oh, so what I'm hearing you say is blah, blah, blah. And there, I get to,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many benefits to it.
Mm-hmm.
I get to be heard. I get to practice reflective listening, right? I get to be who I am with no judgment.
Yeah, and maybe get some insight about, you know, how it all works.
Exactly.
I have to be at a professional dinner in a half an hour, and I that's not something I want to do, and I'm uncomfortable just thinking about it. So that, you've given me some, I will do that on the way to dinner tonight. I'll have a little talk with myself about what's going on.
That's very good. Perfect.
It could
that's
come
perfect.
In really handy.
Excellent.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks for calling, Karen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. You're into Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Today we have the gift of Jen Colmore with us. Jen's a senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and very active in the Living Compassion work in Africa, among many other activities.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yes. And for me it's fun to return to the basics, like reflective listening, for example.
Yeah. You know, as Karen was talking, I just was thinking how is she so right that reflective listening is such a good tool, I mean, in general, of course, and particularly in service. And I was thinking how it's so helpful in doing something like working in a foreign culture that we don't know. We don't, you know, I find myself in that place all the time. Gosh, how can I know? How can I have any sense of what's the thing to do in Zambia, of what's the way to do something, of how to even present myself? And reflective listening is such a good tool because I don't have to know. I don't have to figure it out. I don't have to be able to get inside the culture, which, let's face it, I mean, I can't do, really. You know, I wasn't born there. I don't know. But reflective listening establishes that kind of mutual respect of we're just two human beings here together doing what we're doing.
Yes. Oh. Yes. And talk about coming from a practice with no assumptions.
Yeah.
What could be a bigger benefit
yes.
than working in a culture that is foreign to you?
It's so true.
Yeah.
I think it's truthfully, I think it's one of the big reasons I've always been drawn to travel, and particularly international travel, because there is something so much fun about stepping outside one's own culture and just seeing all the assumptions that I walk around with that I'm not aware of.
Yes.
Suddenly, there's a completely different foreign landscape in front of me.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really
yes.
fun.
Jen, we have another minute or two left here, and I was wondering if there are any parting words you wanted to share with us about Africa or service?
Yes, we would love to, you know, to invite people's participation on all levels, really. We talked about many of the ways to get involved in terms of buying a quilt square on the website, participating in the bridge walk, but also even just emailing us your ideas. One of the things we didn't even have a chance to really touch on is the medical care.
Yes.
Which is one of the next aspects that we're hoping to bring into Zambia. And as you know, Michael, I've begun to talk to everyone who has an interest in that, who has any well, not even necessarily a medical background. There are many folks who are interested just because they have a passion about that.
Yes.
And that's brand new to us, so we're just wide open to any feedback that folks have on how to begin doing something like that, bringing possibly a medical clinic into Ndola. So, yeah, just emailing us your ideas, sponsoring a bridge team, coming out to the bridge walk, coming to the open house, all of the above.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Exciting, as I've said about 100 times today.
That's right. It must be very exciting.
Yes.
It is. And it's fun. It's really fun.
Yeah, definitely fun. That's my experience.
Yeah.
Jen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
It's been a thrill for me. I've really enjoyed it.
Me too.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Thanks,
Good
Michael.
Night.
Bye-bye.